We got the attendance sheet, so there's just a plain piece of paper being passed around today. So I told you how we would conduct these last 2 days of classes. I'll be the student and you'll be the teachers. I'll ask all the questions and you'll give all the answers. So that we can basically review starting from chapter 1. So what we're waiting to come downstairs. Actually, I've supplied a kind of summary for the prelude, the first three verses of the first chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. So as soon as that comes, we'll stop right in the middle of whatever we're doing and go back to it. I'll just make some general points about it. That the prelude presents in a very concise way a summary understanding of what the whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam will present. So if we have that understanding very clear, although it may not be so filled in later on in the course of is coming? Okay. In the course of hearing the rest of the Srimad Bhagavatam, what's just a kind of skeleton picture will fill in. Just like, say, if you remember when the days when there was a team of artists working on our ISKCON art productions for a Krishna book. So one devotee, Bhadra, she just conceptualized the whole thing and put it down in kind of action stick figures. And then Mother Janrani painted the painting. And then Murlidhar came by and put all the little fine detail. And this way they had a production line always going. So, at least in my mind, I think that what the prelude is doing is it's presenting just the stark, simple presence. In the first verse, a list of things will be supplied when we get this thing coming downstairs. And then what we could very easily do in the course of discussing, I won't do it in every single case, but practically speaking, every other verse will be either Mother Janarani or Mother or Murlidhar people coming through and filling in that little stick figure. All of the figures are set, the action is there, then just the rest is embellishment and detail. So that means this prelude is very important, and naturally also the first two chapters, even the first three chapters, are particularly important in the whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam. They're certainly particularly important for this first canto, but for the whole of Bhagavatam, and therefore we'll take the whole day today, even just this review, to discuss these points. I guess we can. I'll just give you some indication what you might expect on the fill-in-the-blank quiz tomorrow. Everyone likes to know what's the test about, so. So if you look at the first verse, look at the second verse. So that's on page 52. Dharma prochita kaitavotra paramo nirmasaranam satam. That's how it starts. So, in this verse, So you'll see in a little outline that's coming down, this will give you also some idea how you might keep notes for yourself, so that later on when you for some reason have to refer back, find something in this volume, you can just look in your notes and right away find it. Or in studying the Bhagavad Gita, same, you have little notes help. So this verse says, the Kaitava Dharma, or cheating religion, is kicked out, and Paramo Dharma is being instructed. The topmost feature of Dharma is being instructed. So one question might be, where is that further described in this volume? So that's maybe a little difficult for you because we haven't done our review. But it's found in the second chapter, and it's in texts, certain series of texts, 5 through 10. Starting with this prescribing ahaituki bhakti, we're causeless. So what is real dharma? That's explained, and the features of that, those features of Parama Dharma are introduced here, further expanded in the second chapter and in so many other places later on in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Or we could just take, as we're doing our review, chapter 2, texts 5 through 10. Or as we're doing our review, we'll make a little list, just like you're going to get some printouts here. So, in that section, chapter 2, 5 through 10, what are those verses saying? We can just circulate it?
Oh, it's
just
typing.
Do
you know how many copies are there?
Well, just count the copies there. It's how many copies. So, as we go through that section, what makes up Parama Dharma, the topmost principle of Dharma? So there's so many things that are listed, that it should be without motivation and it should be uninterrupted. And there's a list of things. So we can say, identify some of the features of Parama Dharma that the Bhagavatam teaches in chapter 4. Verses 5 through 10. In other words, what I would like to do is, especially if we had more time, which we don't, but to have, so when you think about Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, and even just say this volume, when you think about it, you'll have some idea where things are in it. Where philosophical or personal or other kinds of instruction are presented within it. And so if you happen to be on book distribution or being called upon to give a class on a particular topic, you know just where it is. And you're speaking to someone and you have some idea what they're interested in. Oh, look, this book talks exactly about that. It's right here, see? So it's good in so many ways for your own purposes also, for your own practices in Krishna consciousness, to understand what are the instructions of the Srimad Bhagavatam that are pertinent for my practice of devotional service. Okay, so I'm still waiting for the list. So now we're going to go on to what aside from the prelude, I'll just do this summary. The first verse of the prelude is describing the features of the personality of Godhead, Krishna, that make him unlike any other living being. And the word is used there in the purport, asamurtha. Does anyone know the meaning of that word? Jagra Sundara knows. Go ahead.
Asamudra means nobody is equal to or greater than.
Right. Sama means equal. Urdhva means greater than. And the prefix a means not. There's no one who is Krishna's equal. And there's no one greater than him either. Various Vishnu avatars, you could say, they're equals, but there are ways in which Krishna is not equal or greater. So the Srimad Bhagavatam is addressing this Lord, he who has no equal, and no one is greater than him. So this first verse is listing, enumerating some of those features of Krishna, starting with Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, indicating that he is the son of Vasudeva, the son of Devaki and Vasudeva, no one else. And I'll wait for the list to come to go over it further. The second verse, right away, Prabhupada says in the purport, immediately Shukadeva Goswami is glorifying Srimad Bhagavatam. The author is glorifying Srimad Bhagavatam. And then in what ways is Srimad Bhagavatam a unique transcendental literature? So there's some list in that second and third verses. So Krishna's address, the Srimad Bhagavatam is addressed. The glories and the goals of the Srimad Bhagavatam are described. So now I'm going to, we'll jump ahead and go to the verses that describe or list the questions asked by these sages. We'll come back to this and fill it in. But the questions by the sages, what are they? Well, first of all, which verses in the first canto appear? Radhika Ramana. Go ahead. Ramadirya?
9-13.
9-13. And the very last verse also?
23.
So you can put this in your notes. So in the first one that appears is text 9, chapter 1. What's the question in text 9? So both of them?
What is the absolute and the ultimate good for the people in general?
Okay. The next one? Yeah, next question.
The handwriting?
Okay. The next one that comes after that? Tim?
Why is Krishna born the womb of Devaki?
Okay, so the transcendental understanding of the Lord's appearance. What is the mysterious feature of the Lord's appearing in this world, although he's not a part of it? The fourth question?
Tell us about Krishna and his incarnation.
That's right. The fifth one? Jayashree, you writing these down? Subal?
Please explain to us those teachings imparted by the previous master.
Did everyone hear that?
No.
Did anyone hear that? From Prabhupada.
Well spoken.
Why don't you repeat it then?
Please impart to us the teaching of the previous acharyas.
Okay, good. And then the last question is at the end of the chapter, text 23. And that is?
What is now the shelter of religious principles since Krishna has left?
So those are the six questions. So in between the prelude and those six questions, there are a series of texts. 4 through 8. So what's in those verses, 4 through 8? Bhaktim?
Glorifying Shukadeva Goswami for his having heard from Dasi and being a speaker.
Okay, well, that's what's there. In a general sense, it's describing the qualifications of the speaker of the Bhagavatam. The personal sense is the qualifications of Shukadeva are described. So, what are those qualifications that are found? We said before that there were three in number. What are they?
Freed from vice, having assimilated knowledge, and having heard from the discourse of session.
From profitable?
Qualifications of sutta, not shukade. Sutta goes on, not shukade.
Okay.
speaker in general, but
speaker
specifically
in general.
That talking about speakers.
Okay. So you're passing them out? Okay. The qualifications of the speaker, there are three. Free from vice, thoroughly versed in the scripture, and what was the other one? They've heard in disciplic succession. Someone can be thoroughly versed, someone can be a scholar and have read so much, but their understanding is not coming through disciplic succession, so we don't want to hear from that person. They take it in an authoritative fashion because they're scholarly. But one has to have understood the conclusions through disciplic succession. So what else is in this section? Verses 4 through 7. Any other points? Subalpable?
The auspicious place is selected. The forest of Manasaranda.
Okay. What's important about selecting an auspicious place? Yes? Yep. Right. And any other points that are discussed in this section? Parampara? Huh? Go ahead.
Because you're submissive to spiritual masters, you can pay out to all the creators.
Okay. For those of you that didn't hear what he said, there's a verse describing Sutta Goswami as being submissive to his spiritual masters, in its plural. And in this, because of your submission to them, you have pleased them very much. It doesn't say anything further than that, but what that means is, by gaining the favor or blessings of these saintly persons who were in the position of his spiritual masters, plural, he's now qualified to speak. By receiving their blessing, he's qualified to speak. Yes?
Well, just before that, he said that he also is because he knows other saviors who are fully versed. He said he's been trained in Brahm Ra, he knows other saviors who are fully versed, and he's submissive to all of them.
Because this is another point that Prabhupada is bringing up. This is another feature of Murali Ganaka speaking about in his class, and that is having for the Madhyama, at least the Madhyama, to have proper relationships with the different categories of other individuals who are also devotees. And Sutta had that qualification. Not just, he knew about Krishna, and he was serving his spiritual masters, and he couldn't get along with anybody else, or had bad relations. This sometimes disappears in, say, in Mahabharata, that this one has a bad relation with that one. But Sutta was free from that difficulty. He was able to take the beneficial association of the other saintly persons. Okay, anything, any other points? Want to come, maybe you had your hand up before? You had a question or something?
Well, I have a question that
I'm let me just finish this, then we'll take your question. Not that this was a point in the verses, but Prabhupada made a particular point in the purport, in the whole event that's being described, also illustrates that the sages, we mentioned this before, but the sages had great confidence in the principle of holding a sacrifice for the pleasure of Vishnu as that which would be successful in diminishing the ill effects of the age of Kali. And of all the different, because they were also, it's indicated, they were engaged in different ritualistic sacrifices, and at the end of one of those sacrifices, they then put Sutta in his place and he began to speak. So in other words, what we can understand from this the instruction for us out of this section is that out of all the different sacrifices for Vishnu, the one that the sages of Naimisharanya accepted, the greatest of all of them was directly hearing the narration of Srimad Bhagavatam as the most satisfying for Vishnu. Another point is that the purpose of their sacrifice was paramadharma. The purpose of their sacrifice was not so they would get something. Their purpose was to satisfy the personality of Godhead. So there's a whole section in this chapter that discusses that point. About 8 verses describing the singular importance that devotional service is meant exclusively for the satisfaction of Lord Vishnu.
Which verses?
Same. 23-29, specifically, because that's where devotional service is introduced as a reply to the sage's questions. You said 14 through. That would also be appropriate. It would apply. So I just have just to bring it back to our real life and, you know, out of the textbook into our real life. So this little section we just discussed of these sages of Naimisharanya holding their sacrifice and Suta Goswami taking his place, how does that, can anybody comment, how that is immediately appropriate for what we're doing right here in Gita Nagari? During the institute. Yeah. To take the textbook information and make it practically applicable to our present immediate activity, what is this activity the sages of Naimisharanya have to do with what we're doing right here in Gita Nagari? Is there any parallel or connection? Someone who hasn't yet. Christian, are you stretching or raising hand? Christian people.
Well, we're also performing the sacrifice.
Speak loud so everyone in the back.
We're also performing the sacrifice by hearing and chanting about Krishna. So the people who are teaching here and people who are hearing here have to be qualified as they're described.
Okay, anything further?
In order to be successful. And it's also to please Lord Krishna, because he wants us to do this. Prabhupada wants us to learn devotional service and teach it to others, so it's to please him.
Okay. So, anything further? When we're all done, we can just, you know, walk away feeling well. We did our part to take care of diminishing the ill effects of the age of Kali. Anything further from that? Or in addition? Dr. Tim's got his hand up. Go ahead.
During the sacrifice, we're pleasing Krishna. When we please him, you know, that means that our devotional, he's helping us to become purified. And as a result of our being purified, we want to increase our quality and quantity of service to him. So therefore, you know, basically this ISKCON society is a preaching, it's made up of a preaching movement. So when we go back to our temples, we'll try to develop devotees more. Help devotees to read these books and to become, help people become devotees, help people who are already somewhat devotees become more devotees.
Okay. Even just to keep it in conjunction with the text, in this little section, the qualifications of the speaker are described. So all of what we're doing is to help each one of us, whatever our position may be here, to develop those qualifications, to become further strengthened, to overcome our whatever weaknesses, to hear in disciplic succession, to become more learned in the scripture. Because after Sutta had developed those qualifications, he was then called upon to speak. The benefit, there's some common saying that a cracked pot doesn't hold water. Maybe a Chanakya Pandit saying. So similarly, someone who learns something and doesn't use it is like a cracked pot. That you can keep putting water in, but it will all leak out. So we have to, like Sutta Goswami did, be prepared, create situations where we can also disseminate, because, in other words, our purpose in coming here as the sages should be for the pleasure of Krishna. To make ourselves fit to be instruments for Krishna, to disseminate this knowledge further in so many different ways. Okay. Well, maybe we can quickly look back. Wait, you all just got a copy of? I hope you got two different papers.
No.
Oh. Some did and some didn't. Okay, there should be one that says at the top, chapter 1, text 1. And there should be a page that says chapter 1, texts 2 and 3.
Canto 1,
texts 2 and 3. Did everybody get both of those? Anybody not get both of those? Which one didn't you get?
Text 1.
You got text 1?
No.
I have some extras. There's 4 extras. Okay, so I'm not going to take a lot of time. There isn't a lot of time to go over this. But if you can look at the page, chapter 1, text 1. So this same word, asamordva, is here. Then if you look through the verse on your own, the cause of all causes is identified. Krishna is identified as the cause of all causes. In the purport, it's explained in two specific ways, that he's the source of creation, maintenance, and annihilation. And by the way, that's the janma adi asya, janmadyasya, yataha. Janma adi means the creation, and adi means and the rest. So that's a phrase directly from Vedanta Sutra. So this first verse is being tied in directly, as you mentioned this before, as commentary on Vedanta Sutra. How do we justify making that statement? The very first line there, janmadyasya yataha. So asya refers to this material creation. And yataha, he from whom this material creation, annihilation, and destruction is happening. Krishna is identified there as the cause of all causes in terms of creation, maintenance, and annihilation. And in the purport, Prabhupada also indicates he's the source of the creator, Lord Brahma. And he's, from him expands Mahavishnu, the Vishnu Tattvas, and Lord Shiva also. Yes. Anyways, you can...
Maybe ADI instead of A.
Take. Boy. Okay. Tap your eyes and close your with the exception, one can make a case. I'm not going to take the time to go through all this, but I'm just making the general statement that each of these separates Krishna from any other, even Vishnu tattva, certainly also Jiva tattva and Shakti tattva, and the other energetic expansion. With the exception of, one could make a case for number seven, that Lord Vishnu or Lord Narayan, he also has his transcendental abode that's free from any material influence. Propounds Parama Dharma, and substance is established over category. I'll make one comment about this. Point number four, Chinta Veda Veda Tattva, understanding how it uproots the threefold misery, because there's a lot of discussion in the Srimad Bhagavatam about the miseries of material existence and how to mitigate the miseries of material existence. So this third verse is indicating that the threefold miseries are uprooted just by properly understanding the relationship of the Lord's energies to the personality of Godhead. So we've mentioned this several times, but it comes, same idea is pointed out at the end of the second chapter, that misery is existing only within the mind. And it's inspired by the Supersoul according to one's deserve. So if the mind can be given the positive engagement of Krishna Katha, that misery is at once mitigated. But thinking in terms of the self, thinking of the self in terms of the material energy, that's where this misunderstanding of the Chintya Veda Veda Tattva, the threefold miseries, then come into play. The point here then is, again, I said it before you have these papers, but in a quick summary way, the ideas that are later propounded in the whole Srimad Bhagavatam are in a real nutshell way presented here, real compact way. Several verses we'll see in this, in our review here, in these first two chapters, that the Srimad Bhagavatam alone is sufficient for God realization. So what that means, what does that statement mean, how do we justify making that statement, is described even in the early chapters. Okay, so the balance of the first chapter has two more sections in it. One of those sections is texts 14 through 20. So those sections, that section, those verses, are glorifying the hearing process. So you've already heard the glorification of Shukadeva or Suta Goswami as the qualified speaker. So now we're going to hear glorification of the hearing process itself. So what are some of the things that are found if you spend some time preparing for this discussion? What are some of the things that are in this section, the glorification of the hearing process? Andrea?
That hearing is the most successful means in this day and age for spiritual or God realization.
Okay. Yeah?
And then the aspect one is to
okay. So I'd like to comment on things that Prabhupada has said, because this acts at once point comes up several times early in the early chapters of the Bhagavatam. So what does that mean? It acts at once. One understanding, it makes, as you pointed out, it makes the comparison like the Ganges, bathing in the Ganges.
over a long period of time, one can be relieved of sinful reactions. So that's a very standard activity for spiritual purification. So out of all the activities that are good, that are spiritually beneficial and purifying, this is the most beneficial and most purifying activity, engaging in the hearing process. It acts at once, then means it's very, very, very powerful. A verse appears in the second canto, just like a highly potent drug that's injected intravenously into the blood. Prabhupada comments like this. And at once acts throughout the whole body. So also this hearing process at once, immediately acts to purify our existence. Very, very powerful. Another is that it bypasses all of the gradual kinds of purification that sacrificial ceremonies and other beneficial works can bring to one, to make one progressively more and more pious and more elevated through the modes of nature. All of that's bypassed immediately. There's one verse that we'll come across where Sutta Goswami says immediately, or Prabhupada says in the Purport, it immediately elevates one to the Paramahansa stage of sannyas. Just by hearing. So it acts at once, very powerful and directly. What else? Subhaq?
Come to act the symptoms of Kali Yuga.
Yeah, very important. Because the context of all this is the Srimad Bhagavatam is specifically composed by Vyasa for the age of Kali. So he says it's two different verses. One, he says that it's capable of delivering one from all the vices of this age. And he says, you can't get delivered from the vices of this age without it. Anything further? Yes?
Further question. I thought that very few grand people are pretending to know about it, but most people are.
He says, so they're getting, to answer that question, just like in the case of Shamak Rishi and Maharaj Brikshit, where the son of Shamak Rishi curses Maharaj Brikshit to die. And one purport Prabhupada says they're on an equal level, but they're on a not equal level also. Maharaj Brikshit is the one who is bitten. They're both feeling very apologetic towards the other. One is feeling offended the other, and they both want forgiveness from the other. And they're both unaffected by the material changes themselves. But of the two, Maharaj Brikshit is the more perfect. Although they're both on the transcendental platform. Shamak Rishi. Anything further? Yes?
The qualities of the hearer. Because it appears not upon the day.
Okay, so what are they?
Sincerity, requiring sincerely, being submissive and then acting upon the response, and knowing who to hear from.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any other points that are covered in this section?
14 through 20.
You have it for which verse? Anything else? Yes.
religious principles have taken shelter after Krishna's departure. So the question is raised, please describe where religious principles are to be found now. So that ends the chapter. It almost ends our time. So any other points here? Akira Dapago?
Just that, you just said that his departure is one of some Krishna's pastimes.
Say it again?
It's that you mentioned how it takes out that one who appears from the province to get his fortune from him in Krishna's pastimes.
Your fingers in.
Oh,
I can't hear.
That one who is his fortune is one who's in Krishna's pastimes, appears from the province to speak to. Of course, that's qualified in different places in terms of like even Avasura had Krishna going his mouth, Kaliya had his compared
right.
How he's more fortunate than
right.
The devotees to get to here.
Right. Therefore, what you're bringing out is another point that I also wanted to make in the class today. There are very clearly two different, we mentioned it when I raised the question, who is the Bhagavatam written for? Is it for the mass of people who are very sinful and fallen in this age? Or is it for the topmost transcendentalist Paramahamsas? And the answer is it's for both. So there's different benefit that can be derived by one and by the other. In fact, there's a whole continuum. But by gradual cultivation of the knowledge of Srimad Bhagavatam, then one comes to that Paramahamsa stage.
The Paramahamsa means what is taking part.
The Paramahansa stage is a term that Prabhupada uses in this chapter, in this canto, identifying the stage of renunciation as the topmost stage of renunciation. So not whether one knows one's Swarup and is personally participating in Krishna Leela is not the point. That's not. Yes, that will also come, but by attaining the Paramahansa stage, in a general sense, is the stage of complete detachment from worldly attraction, and fully absorbed in spontaneous devotional service. Okay. Okay. So we have 12 minutes to review the second canto, and the second chapter. It starts with the first four verses where obeisances are offered to Shukadeva Goswami. And what are some of the other points that are coming here? See if you can anybody prepare for this? So, well.
Then also glorification of Srimad Bhagavatam is given. Text number 3, there's a hymn that Srimad Bhagavatam is in the commentary of Vedanta Sutra.
Right. Is that clear? Important. Right in the text of Srimad Bhagavatam is saying this is a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Of all the Vedas, it's the ripened fruit. Excuse me, it's the cream. Like the milk, the nectarian milk beverage has its cream, and the cream is scooped off. That's Srimad Bhagavatam. So this, in this way, Vyasa compiled Srimad Bhagavatam, taking the most nectarian portions of all the Puranic histories and compiling them all in such a way that Krishna is directly glorified in a maximum way. Then, the same point as was brought up before, that it at once, or it alone can act to give one perfection. So that's also found in the prelude of Srimad Bhagavatam. This Srimad Bhagavatam itself alone can deliver everything. It's just like Srila Prabhupada said, all you need is Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, everything is there. So this is a direct statement found in the Srimad Bhagavatam itself.
And that means the upshot wisdom is even quality.
That's right. But the subject matter itself. And another, any other point? Yes, Mother Tamari.
You said that it's the most antiquated section of all Quranic literature.
Quranic.
Quranic. That means Quranic? That it's repeated, that we'll find these in other Quranic as well?
Yes. There are some exclusive passages that appear in Srimad Bhagavatam that do not appear in other Puranas, Puranic literature. The Ujjamil story is one. There are different sections. And of course, the detail of Krishna's Leela found in the 10th canto. Therefore, persons who are scholars, they like the Srimad Bhagavatam particularly for the 10th canto, and they don't particularly like it for the other things. But that disqualifies them from understanding the 10th canto properly. What else?
You also said that it's eternal, but it's a history.
Right.
So how can it be eternal? Because it occurs...
History repeats itself.
Exactly.
Huh?
It wouldn't be exactly.
No, it's not exactly. But there's always a Shukadeva, but it's not always the same Shukadeva. The details of the passing of Maharaj Pariksit, you know, their details are slightly different in different appearances of Krishna. But the basic events are there.
You know, it's the first, at the beginning of a Kali Yuga, it'll be next. Because you know how,
it appears, the Bhagavatam appears at the end of each Kali Yuga. Beginning of each Kali Yuga, right?
Yeah, because Kali Yuga is in the future, that's the only thing that's right in the future. In the Bhagavatam, it's past tense, and Kali Yuga is the future. So, although it's eternal, we have to, you know, how sometimes it'll be, if they appear in the beginning of the next Yuga, then everything, even though it's repeating itself, it's no longer the past tense. So it's just out in the future, it's going to repeat itself.
So
then I don't see how it could be history if it's what's going to happen in the future. Because for us, it's just
what about the descriptions of the Kalki avatar? That's future.
But it's Purana. Because
it's cyclical history. It's making prediction of the future events. Historical events that will take place in the future. Alright. Somebody else besides you two? Anyone else have questions here?
Krishna only appears once every... He's just at that Bhagavatam, which is coming right after the departure of Krishna. Krishna only comes once every day of Brahma. He just said that Bhagavatam comes every Kali Yuga. How's that possible?
That's a good question. Another question. Well, I don't have the answer to that. I have a suggestion how it's possible, because it's the information of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan can be known besides this particular unicycle. Without Krishna having just performed those pastimes, the information of those pastimes can be popularized or become known.
That has to be a completely different situation.
Why not? It can be the same pastime that you described.
Yeah, but I mean, you can march, appreciate, in the grand sound, you know, the altar, doing...
That's all right, but those the pastimes can be also described. Even the events did not just take place.
So you just have to, you know, it's not by
this is conjecture, and let's take our time over something really useful. Nectarian topics, and I'm reluctant to get into them for many reasons. Time is one of them.
It's supposed to be like a quick one.
Yeah, I'm trying to recapitulate to help impress what the topics in this first canto are, so that they'll stick with you when you go to your respective preaching places. So in 3 minutes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Periodically, you point out things that are the themes.
Yeah.
Common themes.
Because they're recurring. They recur. Problems.
You got like personal wisdom or everything.
Well, I was going to ask you to speak about some of them. Yeah. Not you, but the class.
Right. What time does class end?
3 minutes. Right. Good one, huh? Okay, so moving right along. Chapter 2. There are several sections besides this introductory section. Texts 6 through 10. This begins some answer to the sage's questions, the six questions. 6 through 10, Prabhupada identifies, excuse me, 5 through 10, Prabhupada identifies that number 6, text 6, is an answer to the first question. It says right in the purport. So the first question, what is the ultimate and absolute good for everyone? So that's devotional service. So this section is describing that topmost Dharma, occupational duty, as devotional service. So there's some points here about self-satisfaction. The first two verses, 5 and 6, identify some factors about self-satisfaction, which has everything to do with dissolving material miseries. The opposite of that is self-satisfaction. So what's necessary to accomplish self-satisfaction? Devotional service, but qualified by saying unmotivated and uninterrupted devotional service. And then the previous verse speaks a little differently, not about devotional service, but about hearing and chanting or questions in relation to Krishna, which infers there's a question and there's a person receiving the questioner and the person hearing the question. So there's two parties, hearing and chanting activity in relation to Krishna, which, as we did our first presentation, I'm saying that's a hint at question 2, which is, what's the essence of all religious scripture? And practically speaking, we had this little discussion that they're very, even in the purports, Prabhupada is interchanging them, they're a bit interchangeable. Meaning, what is the all-around good for everyone, you can say that's hearing topics of Krishna. When someone's on a deathbed, you know, you want to have them hear the kirtan of the holy name and be engaged in the hearing process. Can't so easily engage in too many other types of devotional service. Later in the chapter.